So what shall we look at this morning? Star 6 to unmute yourself.
This is Michael.
This is Sequoia. Michael and then Sequoia.
So I've been noticing the last day or so just a lot of self-hatred. And just about everything. And feels like it's triggered by these new circumstances. And feels like there's no way out sometimes.
Uh-huh. And what is the self-hatred, Michael?
It's that I'm wrong, there's something wrong with me, this should be different,
uh-huh.
And yeah.
That you should be different in terms of how you are in the circumstances should be different?
All of it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yeah. And so I guess what I see now is a lot of compassion for this person doing the best he can and reaching out to practice a lot and participating a lot. And, that I have one precious life to save and I want to do that.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yes. That when we recognize that what self-hate is, this giant process of negation that negates the circumstances and negates you, then when we see the human being caught in those circumstances, then we are moved to offer that compassion, right? And to recognize that this person is doing the best that they can and doing everything that they can in order to assist the practitioners doing everything that they can to assist the human being.
Yes, 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 yes. And the other thing I see is how critical it is to keep all of the basic self-care, you know, like eating well and getting enough water and getting some exercise and practice. And that has always worked. And so it doesn't seem like there's any reason it wouldn't work this time.
Uh-huh. So if I'm projecting, Michael, are you seeing that the self-hate, the operation of the self-hate causes the, there's a conversation about all of that falling away, right? That I don't know if this is true for you, but that the conversation just depletes the energy, right? This is not something I need to do. You don't need to do this. There's such a preoccupation with the conversation that it takes away from, takes our sort of motivation from doing the things that actually take care of us, right? That bring us back here, that feed us, that nourish us. That life is about making sure you get good food and you exercise and you take care of yourselves, whatever the circumstances.
Yeah. Yes. It's like the self-hate distracts me from remembering that. It's like I got a little jogging in this morning, a little cardio, and it felt good. It felt like, you know, this is what the body needs. And, you know, I don't think there was any of that yesterday. And sometimes, you know, to shake up the system a little bit, to bring it back to reality, to take care of the body. Seems like all of that needs to be center stage.
Yes, that to bring it back to the reality in that, so that we don't live in the conversation, we don't live in the self-hatred, we don't get distracted from doing the things that we do. I think you're pointing us to, Michael, and so I'm projecting here and see if it's true in your experience that somehow or the other that conditioning, especially a self-hating conversation, is so much about dimming that light switch, dimming that life force, right? That all of it goes to feed it, and then eventually there's nothing left to participate in life, to stay engaged, to stay involved, to stay true to all the things we do as life being lived, right? And that to recognize the danger that in circumstances that make us feel vulnerable, that the nature of that force is to shut us down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It feels like that's what's happening, and feels like what practice does for me is it continually provides that broader perspective, like pries open the door to get the light in, mm-hmm. so that I can see that bigger perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That doing the practice assists us or provides us with the tool of making sure that the light doesn't go out.
Yeah, and remembering that the light is, reminding myself that the light is still there, mm-hmm. that it can't go out, mm-hmm. you know, that I'm doing the best I can.
Yes.
And these are not the circumstances I would choose, and how can I best take care of myself and everyone else in these new circumstances?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, to accept it's hard, right? And to provide all the support and encouragement, the comfort that is needed in order to stay present to it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to remember that that's not me, that I'm hearing all that, mm-hmm. is helpful to remember.
Yeah, it is very helpful.
Thanks, Ashwini.
Thanks, Michael. Sequoia.
Okay. Talking about prying open the door and letting the light in. I had an experience this morning of having this little or big flash of insight where I saw where something that had nothing changed, but you know, I just saw it in an entirely different light, and it had to do with this worldwide crisis. And what I saw was that love has responded and worldwide, and that conditioned mind is like just working so hard to take that over through the media and everything and the constant, you know, channeling of fear and, you know, this shouldn't be happening, what's going to happen next. But I could see what just lifted me up was that just from a big, broad perspective, the response has been one of love, to attempt to protect life, to, you know, to get people sheltered in place, to, you know, to do what can be done. When there would be a lot of different non-loving choices possible.
Yeah. That as you were looking at what's happening in the life crisis, right? What you were able to see as an insight is that what responded was love. Mm-hmm. That there could have been a whole bunch of non-loving choices, and there are, right? That there is that force that wants to incite fear and scarcity and all of those and negativity, and that's happening as well. But love also responded. That's very comforting, I project.
Yeah, to just see that, wow. The attention can rest on that.
Yes.
And that,
Well, attention can rest on that, and I project, right, the world sort of that we're conditioned often to tune into the negativity and all of that, and that when we also allow for receptors of love, we can see both It's not that the world does not have love, that love also exists and has tangibly responded, and it behooves us to be able to attend to that, to recognize it, to realize that it's also a force that's operating.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it didn't automatically just, you know, eliminate all the other stuff that's going on, but that are non-loving. But to see that that it's all happening, and that.
Sequoia, would you say that last part again? I wasn't following. To eliminate. Sorry, what?
Yeah, let me see if I can say it. I'm not sure what I said. It wasn't just denying that there is not a whole range of experiences going on.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That's so important that the conditioning wants to deny anything other than it, right? That it's the only thing that is. That's sort of ignorance that we talk about in other forums, right? You ignore everything in order to focus only on this. And the picture it paints, it's not very uplifting. But when we step back and we allow for our awareness to register everything that it is, then we see that there's more than just that, right?
That
we don't have to deny all of the other things that are also there.
So as you said, it was just really heartening, and it's like, yes, I want to continue in supporting that unfolding, the love.
Yes,
you know.
Yes. There's this balance that we all strike from staying informed, so that we're not denying how things are.
Mm-hmm.
And being appropriate with the information that we receive. But that's also not to respond from a conditioned perspective where it's all about denial and fear and negativity, that we don't miss that love is a response as well. And that's what I want to attend to. That's what I want my attention on. That's what I want to choose. That's what I want to be. And that's how I choose to respond.
Yes. That's what I choose to respond. And live in as much as,
And live in, yes.
Okay. Thanks, Ashwini.
Thanks, Phil.
Is it Penny?
Justin?
Phil, if there's anyone who isn't muted, would you mute yourself if you're not, Phil? And then we'll bring everybody else on. Phil?
Yeah, I would. You know what? That dropped in for me this morning, that was kind of a miracle for me to see. Is that okay? So there's been these. How do I say it? I guess you could say dualities, or you know, the push and pull of conditioning. Okay, so you need to be, in my case, you know, moving more, getting out more, you know, pushing more, you know, to get back to my strength back. And then there's the other side of that. No, you know, you've got to do this, or, you know, just take it easy, or, you know, don't overdo. But that has been going on, but it hasn't, I haven't been listening to it. You know, I just see what my body needs or wants, but it leaves kind of, you know, that famous area of doubt. And what I saw so wonderfully, and it's nothing new, but it, you know how when they do drop in, it's like, oh, a whole different ballgame, okay, this is an uncomfortable place of I don't know, and that's why, you know, the it has so much power. But then this is what kind of just dropped in, and that was that, well, I don't know is, you know, somebody says famously, another name for God. And I thought, wow, no wonder conditioning, you know, the ego, the self-hate has such a just goes at that continuously, you know, that trying to get a person to doubt because that's the place where they really just need to sit and be in the I don't know.
Right. So that's the insight, right? So there's the duality, and you can see the duality operate on a very important content for you, which is to get better or to take it easy, right? And that that place of I don't know is actually framed for you as doubt, which is, you know, for most people, the place where one departs the now to noodle in conditioned mind. But what dropped in for you is, I don't know, as famously said, is another name for God. And no wonder conditioning wants to appropriate the I don't know to be something that would cause us to turn to it rather than to recognize that it's the moment of mystery, right?
Yeah.
You and I have talked about this a lot, right, Phil? That doubt is the word for it is faith. That there is a knowing in the I don't know, which is what is famously called God, right? That, and it's so wonderful to see how the conditioned label for the same experience is doubt versus faith.
Exactly. And that how conditioning would have so much vested interest in that, because that's what's going to be the difference between, you know, us suffering or not, so heaven or hell. And I saw that in a broader perspective too. I mean, we don't know a blessed thing about how this is going to end up, and you know, the current situation. And yet that place of just, and what I saw is, you know, in all of this, life knows. In some way, life knows. Not how we know, but life knows. And so, you know, we can just rest in that, even in the broader situation. And then, you know, things arise, what we can maybe do to help or what we can do to anything. But at least for me is just to just be in such complete gratitude for everything.
Yes. You know, Phil, as you were saying that, what dropped in is, in that moment when we're caught in the duality, that's where the I forms. You know, Sherry does that thing. She always does it with the meditation bells about each side of the duality maintains the I, right? Because in caught in the duality, the I arises as having to do something. I know I have to figure out what to do in these two choices. And the I is being maintained. But as you said, if the duality can bring, if we step out of the duality and we drop into the I don't know, then there's a way in which life can arise and life does know. Life is totally appropriate. And we can rest in that not knowing sufficiently for life to act. I mean, life always acts. But in the absence of the suffering that comes from the identification or with the conditioning or the belief that somehow I make the choice, right? I'm the agent of this decision and of my health and of whatever it is, how I can help, or however that actually ends up getting formulated based on what the content is.
Yes, and then, and that leaves us open, as I think in, like in the last conversation, to really look at it through the eyes of life, the eyes of love. And that opens all the, you know, the doors to, like I said, gratitude and seeing the kindness, seeing the goodness, and just noticing when the other stuff is there and how, you know, my conditioned mind will react to certain things, you know, you hear and see, but just to stay with those eyes of love.
Yes, so to drop out of the conversation, so there is the opening to come from a context of love and gratitude and seeing with the eyes of love. Yeah. But it really requires us to get out of the conversation. And the way that you're pointing us to do that is to recognize the duality, to recognize doubt, to become aware of it. And in that awareness, the insight came in, right? Well, another name for this, I don't know, is God. And now I am there, right? I'm here.
I'm here. Yeah, exactly. It was a beautiful thing to just see in that context, because it's just one more step to, you know, crush doubt, or, you know, have it turn into light and love.
Yes. Well, and that's lovely, right? There's a recontextualization that happens the moment we are in inciting. And that's all it needs to dissolve it. Need to dissolve everything.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Prue.
Mm-hmm.
Penny. Penny?
I just had to unmute myself. This is a really, really helpful conversation, because I've been pretty upbeat and energized by what's been going on. And this morning I woke up very depressed. And And I had this, the other day I was walking in, I had just been listening to part of some official news conference, and I realized just how dispiriting the tone of all of that was. And what arose as I was walking was this is a time when we have to become larger than we've had to be before. This was true for me. I mean, it was spoken in eye language in my mind. That somehow we have to be able to encompass all of it, and and be large as life calls us to be large, so that we can see it all and hold it all, and not, as everybody's been saying this morning, not let the conditioned view, the negative view, the negative messages dominate. And it was, and so it's been really helpful to see that. And I suspect that when I woke up this morning and I was feeling so depressed, that there might well have been a reaction to that insight on conditioning's part.
Uh-huh.
And so it's just really helpful to hear this conversation, which it feels like this is really what everybody's addressing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that there's a way in which the so I think there's several things, right, Penny, that you're pointing us to, that this is a time when we actually have to be larger, expand almost to encompass all of it. And that there is a way in which when we either expose ourselves to negativity or as you said, like listening to something that has a dispiriting tone to it, what it does is reduce us to recognize that that being depressed or listening to that is a reduction in a time when we have to actually expand sufficiently to include that,
right.
But really to expand, and that when we have an insight that is expansive, then there is the force that wants to shut us down, that wants to depress that expansion, and to recognize that also and come back to the insight of, I need to be larger. Our context needs to be much more encompassing here. And so to be really vigilant about that which attempts to reduce that expansion, and to redirect the attention to that expanded awareness.
Yeah, and as you're reflecting that, one of the things that I see is it would be helpful. I was imagining literally a container and the sort of negative feeling stuff. It can be viewed just as something that's pushing against the walls of the container as a reminder that the container's got to get larger, rather than that becoming the whole of it.
Yes, so that the negative, whenever that negativity becomes our clue or our what prompts us to realize that something is pushing against the walls, and instead of collapsing and letting the negativity become all of it, to make it smaller, then we exert that force, whatever it is, love or expansion or whatever else, in order to expand the container. We can use that.
The other thing that's been really helpful is this idea that Sherry wrote about a long time ago in a newsletter about undulations.
Yes.
Because it's just so helpful to see, like when I woke up this morning and felt so down, I thought, well, it's an undulation, you know. It doesn't, it's not the final word. It doesn't actually mean anything. It's just an undulation, and that's part of the process. And and all of, and so a natural process is undulate, and also I think it's just, again, the process you were just describing there. So I've reached some sort of limit to the container, and so now there's a push. And now the push is to make a bigger container, and that's just part of the undulating process too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think what you're saying, Penny, is so helpful in that when we, the reason why we name things, right, like undulation, is to recognize something that is so, right,
yeah.
And that the recognition of it takes it out of the realm of the condition, there's something wrong with the way I feel, which is sort of the default assessment of the place. But if I recognize
right.
that I'm in this in the trough of the undulation, then there's a way in which I escape, there's something wrong with how I'm feeling, recognize that I'm part of a natural process, and then clue into what you just suggested, that, oh, it might just simply, the insight that there's a limit that has been reached, and this is what it feels like when there is the prompting to expand the limit, and there's nothing wrong with that.
And just the last thing is that seeing it as an undulation also makes it not personal.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not something that I'm doing or there's something that's wrong with me, but simply that it's an impersonal process, and so I'm participating in that.
Right. Thank you, Ashwini.
Thanks, Penny.
Justin. Hey, can you hear me all right?
Clearly.
Great. So something I've been looking at is yesterday during the morning call. One point that was brought up was that ego is right on the heels of life, and it comes in like a second after life, which it brought me back to some interesting content that I experienced a week ago, because a week ago I was driving to get groceries, and I was on French Gulch Road, you know, pretty close to the monastery, and then I just had the experience of life dropping in. And it was like, wow, the monastery is like really close to me, and I can like feel it. And there's almost like this gravitational pull towards it. But then right after, I saw the thoughts saying that, you know, I should have gone to the monastery more, or I wasn't having the right experience at the monastery, and all this other noodling. And I saw it, but I kind of went with it because I thought, oh, no, this is me appreciating the monastery, right? But what dropped in yesterday on that call is no, because eventually it led down to the road of self-hate. You know, you should have gone more. You weren't doing it right. You know, X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're watching that. You're able to see the process that was being pointed to. Something arises, something that allows you to feel connected with non-separate from this place that you absolutely relate to and love, I project. And then right on the heels of it, the thought, the negativity comes in to make something wrong about that, make you wrong for not going there enough, make you wrong for whatever. And you can actually see the process as it's described. Life arises, several beats later, the conditioning comes in, the thoughts come in and transform a sense of connection to a sense of separation.
Yeah, and what was so interesting was I was actually aware of the thoughts like a week ago as they were happening, but it was almost like I kind of went with them, being kind of duped mm-hmm. that, oh no, this is me appreciating, you know, the monastery, and this is good for me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, kind of what you were talking about with that last call was, you know, how far can we expand the awareness? Can I now be aware of the thought that this is actually good for me? And I'm just like stepping mm-hmm. back further and further, if you're tracking that.
Yes. Well, I think what you're pointing to is another conversation we had yesterday, right, where we stop ourselves in practice from indulging all the negative thoughts, but then we don't stop ourselves from indulging the positive ones,
yeah.
right?
Right, exactly,
what
yeah.
The indulgence is what we're letting go of. It doesn't matter what the thought, whether the thought is positive or negative, because if we indulge anything, if we indulge the conditioning in any way, whether it's positive or negative within quotes, then what gets strengthened is indulgence. So I'm only mm-hmm. at 50% training of how I can not attend to that, right? Because 50% of the pathways are not being trained not to attend to it if they're all positive within quotes.
Could you say that last part one more time? I think I lost it a little bit at the end of that.
So if we say, okay, well, I'm not going to pay attention to conditioning when it's negative, but I'm going to let myself pay attention to conditioning when it's positive, then, right, that we're still paying attention to conditioning.
Right, right. We're right. still in the conversation. We're still creating dualities, right, between good, bad.
That's right. So we're still indulging it. And mm-hmm. that's why we say the analogy that I love around that is that the Buddha first left the palace where everything was wonderful, and then he left the forest where everything was very challenging. You've got to leave both, metaphorically speaking, right?
Mm-hmm.
All conditioning.
Yeah. Yeah. Conditioning's conditioning, one form or another.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
Very good. Thank you, Ashwin.
Thanks, Justin.
Margaret? Carolyn?
Margaret. Carolyn. Margaret and then Carolyn.
Jodine.
And Jodine. Okay.
Hi, Ashwini and everybody. I feel like I'm so filled with joy from joy and insights from yesterday's workshop.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like everything that was mentioned spoke to process and hows that I and guidance, like and quoting Sherry that was so helpful and just this amazing workshop. And but what I've been looking at since then and was sort of I was struck by a lot of things, but it feels in a way related to what we've been talking about. It's kind of like sort of a nuanced structure around how I see how this go. Got it. See, it's so related, but it's like I think someone was mentioning how conditioning can come in and tell them to, like, they're on a bike ride and to just extend the bike ride, just go a little too far, you know, go a little further. But it's too far. It's actually further than they had planned or intended. And what ends up happening is that then they, you know, are tired, more tired, or whatever the ramifications are. But seeing that voice coming in of conditioning, like we've just been talking about, and how that extending there tends to fill things up so that they're
mm-hmm. May I?
There's like,
Margaret?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It affects the feeling of spaciousness, or mm-hmm. you know, it's like that place at the monastery doing a work project when conditioning comes in and won't let me end it when the bell rings.
That's exactly right. Yes. So you can what we're paying attention to in that process is life is completely appropriate, right? And then it's that line we say do less than what conditioning says you should and more than conditioning says you shouldn't, right? Or I'm butchering that way of saying it, but that really is what we're paying attention to, that there's a natural end, and then what the voice wants you to do is to extend beyond it. And if you go with that voice, you realize how everything gets upset by, and that spaciousness turns into urgency, right? Because listening to that voice, I keep doing more than I should on every dimension, and somehow my ability to be with the appropriateness of space and time in life's rhythm gets upset.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm constantly overriding the appropriateness, the life message to say, stop now, right? And then conditioning says, no, just do it for one more minute. And so a simple example of that would be, in your case, the bike ride gets extended and you feel tired, or, do this one last thing before you get out of the door, and we find ourselves late for wherever we're going because we've been persuaded by that voice in the head to do one more thing, to do one more thing, to do one more thing.
Yes. It has ramifications that just keep going. And it feels like
keep going. And that's suffering ramifications, right?
Yes, yes. And it's just a false sense of urgency. And what I was looking at as sort of an antidote or a way to work with this was around, somebody mentioned calibrating to a focus or intention for the day of love or support, something like that, that would allow me to keep coming back to something that would remind me of not listening to that voice that wants to fill every moment up, as if somebody else said something that was so good about it. It was like, as if I'm getting ahead of the game that way.
Yes. Yes,
it's such an illusion.
It's such an illusion. I think the reference was, I'm doing something and it drops in to plan about what I'm going to do next as a way to feel like somehow I'm ahead of it all. If while I'm doing what I'm doing, I'm also thinking about what I'm going to do next, and it's absolutely an illusion. And so if we can recognize those thoughts, recognize those voices, we could say, then yes, and if we have a very concrete way of redirecting our attention or directing our attention, if my attention is on gratitude or unconditional love or caring or whatever it is, then that's where my attention is. And when I see the voice come in, there's a way in which I can redirect the attention to the intention.
Yes, and sticking to the schedule. Making a schedule and sticking to it.
Yes, and the timer that we work with is like the bell at the monastery, right? When the bell rings, you're done.
Yeah.
And we train ourselves for that.
Yes, yes. Thank you so much, Ashwini.
Thanks, Margaret. Carolyn.
Hi, it's Carolyn.
Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? Oh.
Yes,
Yes, can you hear me?
Very clearly.
Oh, wonderful. What I've been looking at since the workshop yesterday is that I've been living in for the last couple of days in a dichotomy of nothing matters, which then flips over to everything matters. And it's done in such a way that everything matters is presented as this very kind of Zen way to practice. But what I was looking at it was it brings such a sense of urgency with it, and a sense of doubling down on self-improvement to do this better, that since then I've been looking at letting go of both of those ideas, which is just what they are, but just practicing in what was being pointed to today, which is I don't know, and I'm going to bring as much love as I can to this moment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so many things you're saying, Carolyn. First of all, how the teaching can become can be taken over by conditioning to create that duality, right? Everything matters, nothing matters, and from that conditioned perspective, it produces a reaction. If it's everything that matters, then there's a sense of urgency. If nothing matters, then, you know, there's a sense of indifference I would project.
Yes.
And so to recognize that we've lost the spirit or the place from which the teaching arose.
Yes.
And so to drop into, I don't know, that place where we're talking about with Phil, right? This is
yeah.
out of the duality into here and coming to the only thing that I can do is to show up with as much love as I possibly can. And at some level, right, Carolyn, from that place of absolute love, the essence of what those words originally mean is what we're living. We're not thinking about them as you said, what they are, which is pure ideas. When we think about them, to actually living the experience of everything matters and nothing matters, because we show up with that love and that wholeheartedness, right?
Yes.
We're not idealizing it. We're not thinking about it. We are being.
Oh, thank you for that. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and it's that recognizing that oscillation when I'm in that thinking place, in that conditioned mind place, when it feels just, it feels so crappy, right? and then to realize crappy equals, okay, I'm identified, and I
yeah.
really need to drop out of that conversation into here. And from here, everything matters and nothing matters has are no longer ideas.
Yeah. Yeah. And in what you were saying, I saw that the reason it kept working was that it was crappy, but there was enough difference in the crappiness, so to speak, that the nothing matters felt dead. The everything mattered felt alive only because what it did is it was like a poke like a response to a painful poke rather than the response to a loving intention.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah.
That's so wonderful. I think that's bringing awareness to it, right? Because there's the awareness recognizes the deadness of nothing matters. And also recognizes the quality of everything matters in a conditioned way is it's feeling the pain of a poke rather than a loving intention. That
yeah.
we actually are, we know the experience of what it's like to be completely here and living and feeling alive, everything matters, versus being in conditioned mind and being identified with everything matters. It's a qualitative difference that we can pick up on.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Carolyn. Jodine.
Hello. This conversation is so precious. It's so wonderful to be together like this. And what just dropped in for me is this, I don't know where I heard this, but it's the saying, no one of us has practiced longer than all of us have.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that's like, it's like what group is for me. It's like, I don't know, we're all like tossing pebbles into this ocean of practice that exists because, we did it. We all show up. So one of the things that's up for me is I've been looking at coping and coping mechanisms from like two different ways. One way is like I'm seeing how I go to karma to cope, right? Like I'm coping in this kind of Jodine way. And then there's, people around me, almost all of them virtual, and I notice that they're coping in their ways. Mm-hmm. And for quite some time, I was feeling that was helping me feel like really connected to folks.
Really, what?
Like,
I missed that word.
I was feeling really connected. It was like, people are coping, and I might not be so happy with how they're coping, but I could clearly see that I'm coping too. Like I'm going to karma for my coping mechanisms and laying them out and, using them every day. And does that make sense? I don't know if I'm being clear.
Just so that we're on the same page, when you say you go to karma to cope, what do you mean? Are you saying that you're aware that the way you're coping is conditioned?
Yeah. Yes. Or that at times I'm coping in a conditioned way. So, for instance, I'm a scientist, so I started learning everything I could about the epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
Just like give me. I couldn't get more information. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get enough information about it.
Yep. Got it. So everybody is coping. What you're seeing is because you're aware that you're going to your coping mechanisms, you could see that other people were doing that too.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, my mother only watches Fox News. And I think, it's because she doesn't want to be confronted with another point of view. Like she wants to have that point of view that maintains her world, kind of.
Yes, yes. That is so good to see that we're conditioned in a particular way, and that conditioning wants to be around that which reinforces it and resists what thwarts it in any way, right?
Yes, yes, yep. But for whatever reason, kind of the heightened, everything is important about this, I saw really no difference at all between what she was doing and what I was doing. Like,
mm-hmm. Yes, when we take the self-hate out of it, right, Jodine, we're just aware the extent to which the programming controls us. And that's where the compassion comes in, right? That it's not that I empathize with someone. That's not what we're talking about. But the compassion being the recognition of the extent to which that we all respond from our programming.
Yes, yes.
Especially in times of survival, right? When we all do it most of the time unconsciously, and especially in times that are challenging. This is what Macheri would say, right, that I'm happy to practice when things are going well, but with my health, with my finances, and with my relationship, I want to turn conditioned mind for it because I don't believe
right.
life has any wisdom to offer in that realm.
Yes, so I'm grateful for that insight. So I didn't have to get mad about Mom, you know, but then I did kind of get pushed to, I guess, the limit of that later, which was that a friend of mine who she and I had decided that we would talk every day, she's a close friend, we had a misunderstanding, and I see what happened for her was that she got offended or something, or she got identified because I said something that didn't quite square with her coping or something, and she's turned to kind of like lashing out at me, and sent me an email that was kind of like, here's everything that's wrong with you, and I can't believe you said that, and, you know, a lot of lashing out. And again, you know, I got it. This is her coping. She's coping with this. And the conditioning is, I still project again, you know, all too happy to separate her from her friend during this time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of at a loss. Like, it hasn't really, I don't quite know how to find the commonality in, I mean, I guess I see the commonality, but it's like, I just kind of don't, it's an awkward place, and I don't see a way forward.
Mm-hmm. Yet.
Yet, right. Right. Okay.
So I think that's sort of what we've been looking at a little bit, right, Jodine, that when I'm here, I can see how conditioning is operating me, and I can see how conditioning is operating someone else. And so from that tremendous place of compassion, there's a recognition of this is not her, this is conditioning, right? That's what we are all doing. This is not me, this is conditioned mind. And so there's the ability to see her being operated by her programming and realizing that the person that you're connected to as a friend is not who sent you the email, right? That conditioning is the one that did that. Her conditioning is acting through her. And so the perhaps this is the place to look, right, Jodine, that in that place of compassion, there's a, I don't know. And we want to rest in the I don't know. We want to record in the I don't know. Because what wants to do is conditioning, right? I want to do this. And that if we look at that impulse, I have to fix this, I have to change this, I have to turn it from being awkward, I need it to be a certain way, rather than just being able to recognize that what we are and is compassion. And compassion is a not knowing, and in the not knowing, something will arise. And so to pick up the recorder and talk from that place, something will arise, right? There's no requirement for us to rush into and fix what's awkward.
Right. Yes. Yeah. That's a really helpful reminder. Because, you know, I want her back. I want to talk to her every day. You know, I want to know how she is.
That's a loving impulse, right? Because to me, again, you know, you'll practice with this and you'll see what arises. But just because someone lashed out from conditioning doesn't prevent us from responding in love.
Right. Right, right. And I, it's funny, conditioning, you know, being right there on the heels of any movement, came up with all these kind of like snitty little replies.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't serve anybody. Yeah.
So that's what we always say, right? So in the communication book, that's what we talk about. You record and listen so you can get clear about
how conditioning is distorting your reaction, right? That mm-hmm. it's responding mm-hmm. to her. And then get clear mm-hmm. with, oh my God, I really love this person. I really want to know how she's doing. From mm-hmm. love, what is love? What would love do? And you get clear about yeah. that in your recording, right? So that notion yeah. that when ego says something, ego has to respond is what causes all conflict to escalate and separation to exist. And that's what egos do. They take positions and separate further and further and further, right? And so to interrupt that process by a loving response, wow, whatever that might be, which you'll record and find out. It might help her, right, to come out of the identification. Because that's what facilitation is. When someone else is identified, then my biggest role as a facilitator is assist them to get out of the conversation with the voices so that they can disidentify. That's a gift.
Yeah, ideally, right, that is a way forward, yeah. So, great. Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Jodine. Sherry?
Thank you. I forgot about the star six thing to unmute. I've loved this conversation, first of all. And the two things that I so appreciated about it was I'll just tell you where I went with it and not anything else about it, but that acceptance and awareness are synonyms. Now, this is one of those, I may have seen that before, but I saw it again today, okay? That we don't accept in awareness, or we don't, you know, it's not, there's not two separate processes or two separate actions. They're actually the same thing. And that's why we can rest in acceptance, right? Because mm-hmm. it is awareness. And that, you know, the expanding the container, that, you know, that whole thing, that's actually where I saw that. And that's what we can just relax into. And then another synonym for that is the space between the thoughts. Mm. So that mm-hmm. when instead of, you know, if I try to go to love for something, mm-hmm. I mean, I love that last conversation because you were making it very clear that I can't, that I get to love, right, through mm-hmm. a process of letting go of that conversation in my head. I will get to love. If I try to come from love, then that's just going to be another duality, right? Because I won't really be able to do it, or the person doesn't accept it, or whatever is going on. But when I actually get to love, then that is, there will be the way forward. And in that regard, I can come from love. So I really appreciated those connections. And the thing that I appreciated most about seeing all that is how simple it is, how straightforward it is. You know, that we can accept every duality and we get to choose what we want to attend to, which is really made simple if what we want to attend to is awareness, and the fast track to awareness is the space between the thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So then everything can be exactly as it is, and we are directing our attention to what is going to provide for us everything that we're looking for.
Mm-hmm. There's so much in that, in what you just said, Sherry, and the thing that dropped in for me as sort of what you were pointing us to is, it's very simple because all we have to do is attention on awareness, because attention
yes.
on awareness is acceptance. And within acceptance,
yes.
everything is acceptable, right? Whether I'm in a
dual,
I just register. I'm registering and therefore accepting what is so. And so,
yes.
if there's no movement, that the movement away from awareness is the emergence of I attempting to do something, whether it is to go to love, or I'm redirecting the attention, or I choose to accept this, or that's the movement away from awareness. And if we're able to rest the attention on awareness in acceptance, then from awareness arises whatever information we need in order to move into action without agency, right? Without the I
that's
being
right.
involved.
That's right. And what the way you just said it is perfect, because what we move into is ego doing something.
Yeah.
We take it into doing. From this here now, which is the space between the thoughts, right, from this here now into doing. And and so if we just relax in that awareness, we'll get to see that really clearly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So anyway, love this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sherry. And that brings us to the end of group. So thank you, everyone. And we'll see you tomorrow on the radio show, hopefully.